ever imagine all life as you know it stopping instantaneously and every molecule in your body exploding at the speed of light?
Total photonic reversal.
Photonic reversal.
Photonic reversal with your host, Conan Neutron. Broadcasting from a secret underground lair in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
A gigantic middle finger to everything that is rock about music, rock and roll, and corporate power.
The thing is, though, if you don't laugh, you're going to go on a killing spree with sharpened nails.
Don't it.
Confidence of a hero or a fool, I wasn't exactly certain which.
Could not be more professional.
It means something.
You know, that's my take on it. What's yours?
Protonic reversal!
That's like a science thing, right?
Indeed it is. It's a science thing. It's a science place. It is a scientific fact. They were all up in your face at the time. Once again, for the one, the only protonic reversal. There we go. Coming at you all the way live, but not live at all, actually. On a special weekend edition to accommodate these fantastic gentlemen spanning multiple hemispheres? No. Is it a hemisphere if it's... Yeah. Multiple parts of the world. Anyway, we're talking to Buñuel today. Friends and Eugene from Buñuel. So that'll happen momentarily. Before that, welcome to Conan Neutron's Protonic Reversal. I'm your host, Conan Neutron. I'm a rock and roll lifer that's been touring and recording for 24 years, most known for the band Conan Neutron and the Secret Friends. Music is a huge part of my life, and I use the format of this very long-running podcast to talk about music with musicians whose work I enjoy and respect, but who may not be household names. This is episode 401. Now, if this is your first time listening to the show, archives of it are available for free. No ads, no sponsors, no kidding, at protonicreversal.com. However, if you want to support the show and get episodes sooner, $1 a month at patreon.com/protonicreversal will achieve that goal. If you like the show, or even just a single episode, please feel free to like, subscribe on your platform of choice, share it around on the internet, even leave a review. All that helps people discover the show. It beats back the almighty algorithmic overlords, and it's just a darn nice thing to do. So here we go. So one of these guys, Franz, has never been on this show. And one of these guys is like a three-time returning champion. I lost count at this point. I can't remember. One of my favorite dudes in general, Eugene. I'm very excited to have them both. Franz, Eugene, welcome to the show.
Hey! Hi.
And we have the newest member of Buñuel as well. So ostensibly, you guys are here crossing continents, crossing time zones. Is it hemisphere only north, south, or is it east, west too?
Time zones.
Multiple time zones.
Yep.
To talk about this really kick-ass record.
Yeah, man.
And I think that this, I really hope that people engage with this, hence me doing this, and can really hear it with curious ears, because it's pretty awesome. Like, if I knew nothing about anybody involved with it, I'd be like, this record rules. And isn't that always the goal, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the goal. The goal is to, like, have it based on its own merits, not as a shadow replication of something Oxbowian. But yeah, they've existed, and I always want them in the PR stuff to indicate that this is record number four.
Right.
You know, so it's existed on a parallel path and served quite a serious artistic purpose outside of Oxbow for many more years than this one. But this year was significant because it's a double album. It's the first where we pulled in guest artists and
some great guest artists. You got Megan from Couch Slut on there. Dwayne's on there, who was just on this very show.
From Jesus Lizard. Yeah. And Jacob from Converge.
Yeah.
And it's, I've never worked with Skin Graft before, so that's kind of a blast.
Those guys are great. We love Skin Graft in this
and
house.
And Overdraft is actually, the Milanese label is actually gone over and aboard the Call of Duty, like tracking us down and so on and doing nice stuff for us. So I think, again, I try to divorce myself and I try to be very temperate in what I'm saying. You know, if I just like the record, I say I just like the record.
Right.
But if I actually think the record is great, like I think Mansitude is great, then I'm going to say it's great. And, you know, people going to say, oh, of course, you're the band. You're going to say that. But no, I'm saying objectively, qualitatively, it is great. You may not like it. I'll allow that. You may not. This is
right.
Could not be your cup of tea. But, you know, you will never succeed in convincing me that it is of lesser or not significant quality. And I wouldn't be saying that if it wasn't the truth.
So I think that's interesting. And Franz, I'm going to bring you into this in a minute. But I, as much, Eugene, I've known you for years. We played shows together for a couple decades. We've been just involved in all the ways people are involved within this music thing. I will confess, I kind of came late. Like I really started, like, I think I listened to the first time, I don't know, 4 years ago, maybe along those lines. And I was like, how did I not listen to this? Like, this is awesome. This is totally different. And to me, it reminded me of, you know, seeing you the few times you've done guest appearances and things. Like, I'm thinking back to that Generalissimo song, right? Where it's like, oh, wow. Yeah. Because I feel like being a front man is such a skill that most people do not have, including people who are fronting bands. Mm-hmm. And you've always got such presence, but then also what you bring to it as a vocalist is very unique and interesting. And to hear that deployed differently, which isn't to say that it's, you know, it's ska or something along those lines, but like it hits completely differently as a band.
And that's why it's worthwhile to do. I mean, it wouldn't be doing it if it just seemed like the same sort of thing. I mean, I'm welcoming the opportunity to use my voice in slightly different ways with different emotional tones and timbres. And the record that if you mentioned 4 years ago, it was probably Killers Like Us, which was also the first time it wasn't on solely an Italian label. The first two records were solely on like Italian labels. I think Profound Lore put out Killers Like Us. And now with Skin Graft, we fully kind of integrated. Now we have a North America label and a European label. So it's not just a best kept European secret.
So see, now I don't feel the prerequisite shame I felt before for not being as aware of it. Because I was like, how did I not know this? Because I'm a guy that digs, right?
Yep.
So it's
but
like,
you didn't have to dig. I've been pretty vocal about it. It's not like I've been sneaking around not talking about Bunuel. I've been pretty aggressive talking about it. But, you know, there are only so many hours in the day.
So I think that, you know, this is a killer record. I want to get into the actual record itself, but first, Franz, how are you? How you doing?
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's my first time on a TV show in USA.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you. And unfortunately, you're on two guys that love to talk, are good at talking, and know each other pretty well. So I want to bring you in. Where are you at with this record? You know, it's fantastic. Like, I feel like this is like a really kind of mission statement record for the band. It's not that you guys were messing around or anything before, but this is definitely a Coming for Blood mission statement sort of record. Tell me a little bit about encapsulated as any way you like. Come to the path of this record. Like the sound has evolved, but it hasn't, you know, changed necessarily. It's more very finely honed on this one though.
I think our goal is to make records because we love getting on stage and play them to kick ass live. This record is really aggressive and hypnotic. We work with Timo Ellis from Netherlands. He's a really good producer from New York.
Some really cool keyboards on a couple of the songs from him, generally, right? Yeah.
I love to get record. I love to do music.
Yeah, this is a good one.
Yeah.
By the way, I realize I'm being somewhat of a jerk because I'm making you like give erudite paragraph style responses in not your native language, whereas my Italian is horrendous. So, so apologies for that.
He could give an Italian too, or you could translate. But you know what's funny? It was really funny about this whole record is that at one point, you know, my sister's a singer as well. She won a Grammy for doing this thing with Stephen Marley, Bob Marley's kid, back in 2007. Yeah. And so she's in New York recording something with some guy, and, you know, just happens to mention a passing. He says, oh, I'm in a band. And she goes, what kind of band? He goes, oh, it's probably like kind of weird rock. You probably wouldn't have heard of it. She goes, well, my brother's in a weird rock band. And he's like, well, who's your brother? And she goes, well, Eugene Robinson. And he kind of goes, Oh God. And then that was Tim O'Ellis. So, you know, my sister is doing kind of R&B and funk stuff.
Yeah.
But so it was really fortuitous that, so I mentioned this to Jabi, a guitar player, and he says, oh my God, I'm friends with the guy. And maybe let's ask him if he'll produce the record, Mansitude. So, so he agreed to to produce it. So it's weird, kind of like all in the family type deal. But I mean, you know, words like, you know, when you start out talking about this album, particularly in evolution and sound, I'm not aware of, you know, evolution, right? I mean, you know, the lizard that lives on land is not aware of the fact that it used to live in water. It's just, you know, in this instance, I think what we're doing is, you know, following the dictates of our soul, and we're desperately not at all interested in doing stuff that bores us. And then, of course, Franz has it completely right, more so than any other acts or anything. You know, Buñuel thrives and lives in a live space.
Yeah.
In a live space. So the idea of, you know, is like Albini's idea behind recording. It's like, what you guys do live is what I want to get on record. And so this is pretty much how we approach, you know, the record versus the live thing, because I mean, that's how I'm writing the lyrics. That's how I'm singing the song, with a very definite eye toward, like Lawrence Ferlinghetti once said to me, anything you write, anything you put on paper, you should be comfortable reading aloud. And so that's the way we do the record, where it's like, yeah, we're going in the studio to do this kind of magical thing, but nah, it's all about how it's going to feel when we play it live.
We've done
four tours, maybe five possible tours of Europe. And on this record, what we want to do for the first time is not only tour the States and to the U.S., but go to Australia and of course, back to Europe. So Dance Card will be full for 2025. We've made videos, so we're going to play it until the wheels drop off.
Which is wild. So on that first point, the idea that, like, this is a band, you know, four albums deep, right? Four albums, new. And to American audiences, you know, they would know you, Eugene. They would know you from Oxbow. But, like, it's not like all the rest of you guys have not been in, like, awesome bands. It's just bands that are not well-known in the U.S. And so that's interesting, too, where it's like, that'll keep you humble. You know,
the first couple of tours we did that I did with Buñuel, right, like, Jabi goes on stage and the audience goes, because of Jabi. You know, Franz goes on stage, they go crazy. The bass player, whoever, they go crazy. And then I come out, and the audience goes like, "Eh?"
Huh? Who's this?
It was so cool for me to be able to actually be like the weak member of the band. It was really a nice difference, you know.
It's in a way, it's a good place to be for a performer, because it's like, well, I'm about to show you what's up, you know. And I think it's interesting that I'm glad you guys are going to be doing some U.S. stuff. I think that's going to be really good for you guys, and I have yet to see you play. I've seen some, you know, live footage and stuff, which is good. But it seems like it's a powerful, hard hitting live act, right? So, I feel like it doesn't matter what era you're in or what country you're in, people will understand that. There's a lexicon. There's a language between that. That's between a performer and audience member. And I'm psyched to see that. I'm psyched that's happening. I think Skin Graft, home of the freaks, nerds, and weirdos, you know, that it's a great place for this band in the U.S. Yes. You know, they rich tradition, multi-decades of just like, I don't know where these guys are coming from at all, but it's great.
And yeah,
it's totally lovely. It's I can't say enough nice things about Skin Graft.
Yep.
So I think that this is something where everybody is coming from a place of being very seasoned as musicians and performers, and When I mentioned, like, the evolution part of it, I just meant, I mean, there's zero fucking around on this. Like, everyone is mission focused. And I love that in bands I don't like. Because I'd be like, wow, you know, respect. I don't want to listen to this music, but they're just a killing machine doing this live. Yeah. So when it's a band I do like, it's all the more impressive. And it's kind of interesting that for American audiences, Boonwell, it's kind of like the underdog. It's going to be like, oh, Oxbow guy has got a new band. And it's like, well, first of all, not that new. Secondly, it's not just Oxbow guy.
Yeah, right.
But of course, look, man, it's a minor miracle anybody pays any attention to anything at all, right? Mm-hmm. So it's what
well,
it is.
Well, I mean, you know, also in past times, the other three releases, they were sort of like we did Thin Black Duke, then we did maybe Resting Place for Straight. I mean, it's always been interleaved. Like there's been an Oxbow record, then a Boonwell record, Oxbow record. Yeah. But what makes this unusual and strange and different, of course, is that Oxbow has ceased to exist. Yeah. So that raises a level of interest and focus that I think is maybe an incorrect way to approach it because they have existed together for a long time, but whatever, you know, whatever.
Like it isn't Rollins Band coming after Black Flag. Like this
correct.
Is like a different scene. Yeah.
Correct. Correct. So, you know, but whatever gets people into the shows, cause you know, I mean, if we're about the live thing, it makes more sense to, I mean, we had to make a decision recently. We were supposed to go out with another band that made a great package. Mm-hmm. And then the band had serious illness had fallen in. So we had to kind of postpone. And then we said, well, look, if it's just us, then it's a different deal. And so, yeah, but we don't have any interest. We don't care about the money, but we want to play to a sizable number of people. So
you want to get in front of people. So,
we'll wait. Yeah. It doesn't make sense to play in front of, go to New York City and play in front of two people. A video could take care of that, you know. But if we're going to show up and these guys are going to get on a plane, we want it to be the best thing possible.
And that is, so those are, like, imagine the decisions of a 20-year-old person, right, versus, you know, play music now, where it's like, oh, yeah, let's just do it. Like, and then it's like, well, no, you're thinking long term. You're thinking
well,
about,
the key to be a 20-year-old musician who makes it to a 62-year-old musician is not to do shit.
Because well, sure. I mean,
that rules you. I'm kind of immune to rejection. I don't mind. I played in Oxbow. We played shows to one person. People.
I think I played a show where there was like maybe like five people.
Yeah,
you know?
So I'm kind of immune to kind of self-criticism. Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Five but, or 5,000, they're going
to
get.
But at the same time, I am sensitive to loss of money, and that's not what I want.
Yeah, so. Well, that's with an eye towards keeping everything sustainable, keeping the boat moving, but then also
making
it worthwhile.
And credit is due to you as well. I have to say, as an aside, that I played the Catawall Festival.
Oh, of course.
Catawall Festival, and that was revivifying to actually play a show in the Midwest that was well attended because it's been a long time for us for that before since that's happened. So, you know.
And people that are not only engaged with what's going on, but are deeply present and listening and not
correct.
Just, you know,
correct.
Waiting for
correct.
Idols or whatever's coming up next.
Yep.
So, yay me, you know, but anyway.
Seriously.
Franz, no, I deeply appreciate that. I'm saying something kind of funny to sort of like take any awkwardness off it. Also, it's not just me, to be explicitly clear.
That's right. That's right.
But there should be, what I always say is there should be like 20 things like Catawall.
Yeah.
And the reason why people don't do it is because it's a lot of work.
Yep.
And the rewards are not usually fiscal, is what I'll say.
Yeah.
Franz, when you're putting together. When you guys are writing the songs, when you're putting together the music, what's the process for writing the music? Like, are you guys siloing? Are you in the room bashing it out?
Yeah, we make the record in three days, only three days by instrumental. We work on the a riff. We start with a riff of drum or guitar, and we play together, and we I use a large set of drum I also use percussion instrument to create to create sound effects. I want to do my favorite record every time I go to the studio.
If you're not doing that, what the hell are you even doing?
Is it, yeah.
It's like, what are we even doing here?
I love to do music with Xavier, Eugene.
I think that This record hits pretty hard, up to and including like the mastering, like how it sounds. It's very just like in, like just.
Yeah.
Well, it's the motion I just did for the audio listeners, which is the palm yeah. up, like right to the face, and it immediately makes strikes the listener as there's an immediacy to it, right? There's something that's like, oh, this is okay. This is not background music. This is not something to put on your laptop while you doom scroll or something. You know, like it
really
demands
aggressive.
To be listened to. Yes, and it's an interesting choice. I think it works really well for this record because I think in the mid-2000s there was this loudness war of everybody was just trying to be louder than everything else, right? You know, that motor, not everyone can be Motorhead. And you ended up being something where, oh, it's tiring. It's tiring. Like, this is good, but, oh, when's
yep.
it over?
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
And I think you guys go right up to, and I'm thinking even about Iggy remixing Raw Power.
Mm-hmm.
And it just being like one waveform.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as in this,
which of course means that whenever you, no matter where you are in the room or wherever you are, when you hear it, you always know that it's Raw Power.
Oh yeah, you know it immediately.
Yeah. But so then, that way, it kind of succeeded in a really brilliant way. But yeah, I don't like the sound of it. Yeah.
No, as a bold aesthetic decision that you will never forget.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely. But as a record, I prefer the Motorex.
Yeah, man.
But
yeah,
respect
yeah.
for the hustle for that. But I think that there's a lot of people that got involved with that like they went so far that people were like, oh, well, actually, you know, if you look at My Bloody Valentine Loveless, mm-hmm. you know, the waveform on that, it's not what it doesn't look like a belt. You know, like there's actually peaks and valleys for it.
You know what's weird? What we did with the Oxbow thing, and this was starting with, I think, Narcotic Story, was we sent 30-second samples out to like 5 or 6 different mastering folks.
Oh.
And we had to, and we paid them for it, which is why we had never done it before.
Yeah.
And the mixes that came back of this 30-second were so wildly different. I was like just punching myself in the face thinking, I've been doing music since 1980 and I'm just now discovering that you should probably audition your mastering person because they were wildly different. And it, you know, and then we settled on the most genius one, which was, you know, Emily Lazar at the Lodge in New York. And then, but for vinyl, we stuck to John Golden. So when we find people that could, you know, Tim O and the Italian Cat who mastered it, we find people who can, in the spirit of Brunwell Live, can actually just, it makes, yeah. there's no need to go other places. Rather just, oh, a record's done. Maybe just get somebody to, it's not just get somebody. It's a last, portion of time when your record can be fucked up, pay attention.
Because it can be ruined.
Totally. I mean, like, you know, what got Albini into the business is what kind of, I remember in the early days of Whipping Boy, you know, saying, George Horn. I love George Horn at Fantasy Records.
Yeah.
Great jazz mastering guy.
Creedence Clearwater, man.
That's not the guy that I needed for a hardcore record, you know?
No, not at all.
I love George Horn. Because in his mind, he's got, I got to make this sound more like, you know, and that's not what you want. Want to sound like the band. Want Boonwell to sound like Boonwell. So,
well, and the record and the band sound very much of the now. Also,
yeah.
Like it doesn't sound like throwback music. And I'm not trying to castigate people that make that are comfortable. Let's charitably say honoring the spirit of those that came before. But it sounds very of the now, up to and including the mastering. Look, I don't bring up mastering on this show very much, but I think it actually it's part of the overall vision. For the band and the record, I think it's deployed very effectively.
Well, and this is how the band actually started, either as well. I mean, Xabi and Pier Paolo, who were the people who said, "Let's contact Eugene." They had a love for a very specific portion of like early noise rock, and not mm-hmm. only under normal circumstances, they sent me some music. I'd listen, go, oh, that's cool, but I'm not interested. But it was a section of noise rock where I listened to the vocals and I said, I love this music, but the vocalists are all doing some sort of ersatz kind of. They're just doing an Albini take. Because
right. It sounds like Chris Spencer or Steve Albini.
Correct. And so they're you know, it's kind of the sardonic distancing thing, and that's not you know, if I'm doing something, I'm doing it seriously, and it's because you know. So I don't care so much about being crafty or clever. So I'm a hammer. I'm not a miter. So I think that's where I said, for years I listened to that stuff and said, these guys are great, but they should have me sing. Ultimate. Never said that about Big Black or Shellac or any band like that. But I like Naked Rig, and I go, yeah, I could really kill this song. Or you know, some of the other bands like from that era. I go, man, they should, you know. And in one instance, we approached the guys in U.S. Maple, because we said, let's do a vocalist trade. But Al was definitely not into that, because I loved them so much. I wanted to try to sing on one of their songs just to try it, you know. He shot it. Mark Shippey was into it, but Al was not into it. So when they came with all these Boonwell songs, I was like, that's my chance. So,
well, I mean, in you're a vocalist that has what a lot of people strive their entire life for, which is you have your own style. And your own presence, and that there are people that this is note perfect, and there's nothing there. I don't care; it doesn't matter to me at all. It's like some people, Dwayne Dennison. The second I hear him play guitar, I know exactly who it is.
Hey, right? Man, when I saw Brad Paisley for the first time at the Grammys, I was like, man, this guy is perfect and perfectly boring. It wasn't until his stand-up comedy stuff is what made me a fan of Brad Paisley, not his live show, which was just L.A. perfect, and I hated it.
So. Yeah, exactly. It's signifying nothing, right? It is exactly what it is. And if you listen, and it could be any instrument, like drums, right? You know, the Crover, Trainer, McNeely, like all these drummers that it's like,
Franz.
I know it is.
Yeah.
Which is where I was driving at. So Franz, where your the drummers that you like or respect, who are they? Who are they?
Dave Crover, Todd Trainer.
Has this name them all?
Dave Grohl, Josh Fries. Josh Fries. Zach Hill is my favorite drummer. Is Zach Hill from...
Oh, Zach Hill from Hella. Can I tell you? I played a cafe in Elk Grove, California with them. It was like their fifth or sixth show. And seeing that guy just do his thing, it was like just watching 40 kids and their heads explode.
It's totally crazy. He's an alien.
I can hear all that. So you're coming from sort of that era of music mostly for as far as stuff you're trying to be in the spirit of. Or you are in the spirit. It's not trying to. Nobody's trying to.
I try to imagine the pattern, rhythmic pattern, and the rhythmic part is good. Works for dance.
I'm glad you said that, because some of the stuff that you've done has reminded me of bands like Queens of Stone Age with John Theodore, right? Has brought there's a different sort of vibe to it than just, it's not just pounding.
Yeah.
There's a groove to it sometimes. There's kind of something it's that's...
Most important thing.
Yes, I agree. We got enough bands that don't do that, you know? It's enough.
I'm surprised to hear you not mention Dave Lombardo.
Dave Lombardo.
That guy's pretty good.
Igor Cavalera from Sepultura, Dave Lombardo.
Yeah, those guys are getting good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was funny when I did that show with Bungle, and I did the Circle Jerk song, World Up My Ass. Mm. At one point, he comes up to me, and he wants to cue me in. He goes, okay, when we hit the G, you come in. He's doing all this music talk. I looked at him. I just let him finish. I goes, bro, I'm a singer. He's I don't know a G from the fucking I mean, Tom Araya plays bass. He might know what a G is. Yeah. You know, Mike Patton reads music. He goes, he just kind of pauses, looks at me and goes, okay, how about this? 1, 2, 3, 4, boom. I go, okay, that I understand. So
that was
Franz knows how to communicate with me as well. points, looks, and then I go. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, some people you show up sheet of music like to me, and it's like looking at a comic book or something. I don't.
Oh, really?
Sure.
You can't read music either?
No.
Oh, okay. All right.
I apparently know music theory, but by accident, and just like hard, and it's not like I was being obstinate about it or anything. Like I don't know, didn't seem important.
All right. Good for you, man. Good for you.
So I developed my own voice in spite of it, which isn't. There's no wrong way to do it. Seeing you do that song was especially awesome because that was the first punk rock record I ever got.
Man, you know, Circle Jerks gave me the opportunity to play my first show ever. So it was a weird, really weird, cool thing. You know, it was Circle Jerks, Effigies, and some other band, and we were whipping. As I say in the memoir, Whipping Boy Whipping Boy was all there. We said, hey, we should play. And we were so big and scary, they were just like, okay, go ahead.
we did
three songs. They let us, you know.
I forgot. Yeah. I totally forgot about that.
At the farm in San Francisco.
That's right. That's awesome. I think that it's nice when people can have the lexicon, like the language of music, to know how to speak to one another to get the best out of them. And what works for one isn't going to work for the other, right? Yeah. Some people go, in the middle eight, we really need to be like, man, middle eight, what are you doing?
Well, I hit it. About? I hit. Not only did I hit it, and I hit it, and I got all the lines right and everything. I was actually amazed through the mist of time and copious amounts of narcotics that actually managed to stick with me. But it was really fun to do.
And then there are people that, you know, they can have these note perfect transitions for any kind of music and just really oblique and interesting composition ideas, but are not able to communicate emotion in any way, shape, or form as well.
Yeah,
so
it's
everybody. It's interesting that the bands come in literally from different places and multilingual because there is a translation process oftentimes between them.
Maybe. I mean, what is it? Jabi speaks, what, 5 or 6 languages?
Yeah.
Ron speaks 2 or 3. I'm the one. Yeah.
Sorry, we're from America.
Yeah.
I took a drei Jahre nach der Oberschule auf Deutsch, and that's all I got.
Ganz genau. Ganz genau.
Literally, it's like, I got 3. Most of it was just coming up with all the best swear words and all.
Yeah.
You know,
meine,
like
meine
high school
Deutsch
stuff.
Is sehr schlecht.
Yeah.
My
Deutsch is nicht so good.
Yeah. And now Spanish because of the move to Spain.
Yeah, man. That's I can't remember if you mentioned. Did you mention that on air last time? I don't remember.
I don't remember what happened last
week. But that's you're moving.
I gotta be closer to Franz and Javi and Carl.
Yeah.
That's why I'm going.
Yeah.
They think that's gonna be a good thing when I'm hanging out at their house all the time to be like, hey, where's this guy gonna leave?
Yeah, yeah. You got somewhere to be, man?
Yeah.
No, but that's
this summer we went to Spain together to record a video.
Yeah, man, that was really
fun. Yeah,
solid.
It was fun.
Awesome.
This is where we went. I have it right here. So we filmed pretty intense 4 videos for Mansitude.
Sure.
Which will be coming out bits and pieces. But it was, I mean, if you've never been to that part of the world, that in and of itself is phenomenal. But the videos were great. Done by Anna Paula Martin, who did videos for, she did Gunnel for the last Oxbow record. And
That one's good. Yeah.
And did a bunch from Killers Like Us as well. So it did the one where I murdered Franz in a hotel room.
I remember. Well, I think that the melding of the video image and the music is somehow back to being important again.
Of course.
After like years and years of it kind of being like not.
Well, because MTV sat on it like a toad, but the reality of it is way more people have watched our videos and have bought our records. So, you know,
we
got to take it where you can get it. So.
Take it when you can get it, absolutely. Fellas, I want to do service to this record. And if you're both into it, we can kind of go through each of the songs and you can tell a little about each of the songs. Is that something you'd be interested in doing? It's okay.
I'm time restrained, but let's do it.
Yeah, that's why I was looking at the time. I kind of want to get down to that.
Yep.
Mansitude. So basically we're gonna trade off. You guys are both gonna trade off going first and just say something a little about each of the songs, you know, whether it's a specific part, you know, where the title came from, Eugene lyrics, drum part, you know, whatever. Doesn't matter. No wrong answers. Just giving a little context to the piece of art. So, Franz, we're going to start with you. So we're gonna go with Who Missed Me. Tell me about this one.
Who Missed Me is, I think, my favorite songs from the album. It's a really strange part of guitar and vocals and drums. It's really aggressive. Like the drum of Zakil and the song has a rit, new wave pattern of bass with another, is a really strange mix between between music, new noise rock. I think yes.
Very good, very good, Eugene.
Yeah.
Drug burn. Well, there's a friend of mine who had, for a time, I guess when the FBI was looking for him, had been dubbed unofficially the Crystal Meth King of Oklahoma, which is weird because he's not from Oklahoma, but wherever, that's where he made his bones. And he got busted and sent to prison for about 20 years, and he got out 17 years. And the first person he called when he got out was me. And he's not shy about it. He's done podcasts under, his name is Tony Collins, but it's listening to some of his tales of derring do that got me to focus my mind on drug burn. And the first three records, A Resting Place for Strangers, An Easy Way Out, and Killers Like Us, it was a kind of a trilogy. It's a kind of film noir-y trilogy. But, you know, crime is a preoccupation of mine, clearly, having both been a victim of it and a perpetrator of it.
Sure.
So I just kind of like the kind of want to encapsulate some of his tales of derring do into drug burning. And then also, same time, a friend of mine who's a guy who, this guy get crazy, a guy who I knew, Steve Tawson, was the head of the San Jose Hells Angels. And, you know, the Hells Angels always had, they didn't have too many bylaws that would mm-hmm. make sense to everybody else. But one of them was, that I always liked, was no drug burns. So it's like, yeah, there's no honor among thieves, but no drug burns. So that's where this song came from. So,
and anything to tag on Who Missed Me, too?
No, I like what Franz said.
All right, right on. Mm-hmm. Franz, anything to add on drug burn?
Yeah, I really like Drug Burn. It's a catchy song.
And the video is out of this world. You haven't seen it yet, so I'm just talking, but I got to tell you, the video on it is fantastic.
Okay, well, I'll be the judge of that, but I believe
you. Yeah, you will. Yeah.
Awesome. Looking forward to it. Class, that's the next one.
Class will be the third song, single of this record.
Yep,
it's a sister or brother of Who Missed Me.
Oh,
because
sure.
We made Who Missed Me the same day of Class, where nice. It's one song for me. It's the same song. Is.
The feel of them, they sit nicely together, so that does make sense.
Also, let's have Franz do movement number 201.
Okay. All right. You got any thoughts on Class before we do that, Eugene?
No. I like what he said.
All right. Right on. So how about movement number 201? Tell me about that, Franz.
It's a jam. It's like a free jazz. It's a performance where no program with this song. We made a jam.
What was movement number 1 to 200 like?
it's
like funk 49. How many funks are you gonna do, man?
A strawberry letter.
Right, exactly.
It's a song for Skin Graft.
Right,
Skin Graft record.
There you go. Yeah, very good. Very good. Anything to add on that, Eugene?
No, I like that.
All right, Franz, hit me with Bleat.
I'll do Bleat.
Okay, all right, Eugene, hit me with Bleat.
Franz did two in a row. I wanted to do Bleat because it was so funny. Like, I've maintained an association with Jake from Converge for years, and I was just agonizing over asking him about this, man, because it's like...
Really?
Yeah, because it's just like, you know, we've had... Like, I've interviewed him and written about him for, I think, for Vice, and had him on my show at one point. my podcast. You know, she was just, but I couldn't hear anybody else's voice but his on this. And I know, fact that one, he can actually really sing, and two, I thought he would really like doing it. But I was like, man, if I ask him and he says no, I'll just go to the next person. I go to that. I'm going to be crushed. And so I was very tentative about it. I said, hey, Jake, I don't know if you'd be interested. And he was like, yeah, I'll do it. And I was like, it was like really, you know, I mean, he's perfect for the song. He's one of the few front men that I was like, him and Greg Pucciata, you know, I look at us as being like the troika of guys who are well by their sell-by date are still killing it on stage. You know? and it's no mistake because they're all keeping shape. So
it's an important part of the entire package, as they say. Franz, you have anything to add for Bleat?
Bleat is a really rock, aggressive song. The riffs is Jesus Leads our song, I think. Yeah, like Jesus Leads. I love Bleat.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's a banger.
Yeah.
Tell me about Killing on the Beach. A Killing on the Beach.
A Killing on the Beach is a really romantic song.
It's a romance song.
Yeah.
What Cora just did.
Let's see.
Oh, there we go.
Wow. That's pretty good.
She did it with mom. So, but hey, let's cut. I'm sorry, I'm gonna have to go soon. So let's go through it.
All right. So, Killing on the Beach is a romantic song. Great. Right. Is that it? Nothing else to say? Okay.
It's inspired by Camus as well, right?
Yeah, you cool.
Recognize from the title, which was then also a nod to The Cure and so on. So it is a romance song, and another one of the songs that we did a video for, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's romantic, but not a ballad.
Correct.
Yeah.
How about Leather Bar?
Leather Bar
is that romantic?
No,
it's romantic
for
some people, I guess. I don't know. I'm not judging.
When we start imagining the composition of the new album, we aim to create a truly intimidating track. And Leather Bar was born to convey that feeling. It's intimidating, I think.
And for me, it came from, because, you know, I wrote the lyrics. Today, a friend of mine was in a leather bar down in Silver Lake, and he saw a fairly macho front man whose name, you know, whatever, we'll keep the guy's confidence. He was there in the leather bar, and the dude, my friend, says, "Oh, dude, you're," and the first thing out of his mouth was, "I come here for the jukebox." was like,
"All right,
whatever,
dude,
man.
Chill, man.
Whatever. Who cares?"
Exactly. That's funny. Yeah. High Speed Chase.
It's a song to drive a car really speed, really.
Yeah, you know what the Godard movie Breathless, when he says cars are made to run, not made to stop, is what he says.
Well, but there's a reason. There's a period after all of these words, and this comes from another friend of mine who actually was a professor. He used to have what I always thought was endlessly entertaining, a submarine switch on his car. So he'd get in these high speed chases with cops. They would chase him, and he would flick on the submarine
like James Bond.
And it blacks out the car from the rear, and uses running lights on the front, so they can't, all of a sudden the car disappears. They can't find you at night. So, yeah, kid. All right, here I come. Yeah. And then, of course, American Steel with Dwayne Dennison. That was I had less trepidation about asking him to do it because I was in touch with the Gang of Four, and they were, when they were still looking for a guitar player, and I was heavily pushing, campaigning for that guitar player to be Dwayne.
Sure.
And they were sent on that woman. What was her name? Saint Vincent. Is that her name?
Yeah. Annie Clark. Yeah.
Yeah. And they were fixated on getting to her, but I was pushing for Dwayne aggressively. So I think he was like, even if he didn't get the gig, I think he was happy. And then he listened to the music and liked it. So it was great. It was great to have him on it.
Just being in consideration. Yeah. And it'd be my buddy Dave Powell from Slint. Yep. Which, yep. I mean, look, that's weird. That guy I trade riffs with is in Gang of Four now. That's cool.
Yeah. It's wild.
That Franz, anything for American Steel? Killer song, by the way.
It's a killer song. Yeah. It's more sleazy than the other songs. It's, and the final is really speed. The first part of the song is slow, and the final is really speed.
Yep. Come out next, Fixer. You're a friend of mine, Megan.
Megan. Yeah, we played with Couch at your Catawall Festival. Yeah, kid. Okay. I'll talk about the Fixer with Megan, then I gotta go.
Okay. All right.
Megan, we Couchlet, of course, drew our attention instantaneously because it comes from a line from an Oxbow song off of An Evil Heat. Yep. So we got, this band's gotta be great. And then we start listening, and then they toured with us, and then we played with them again at your Catawall, and there was no. I asked two people. I asked Julie Christmas, who said, yeah, no. we'll do something together, but it's got to be, she wanted to really plan it. And then goes, without question, immediately. And she did have one question. She goes, it can't be on, she had a list of people that she wouldn't work with, and she wouldn't, if it was going to be on Profound Lore, she wasn't going to do it.
Oh, word, okay.
For political reasons, whatever. And but when I said no, it's going to be on Skin and Graft, she goes, I'm glad to do it, and she just killed it. I just listened to it. So we've released two singles. We released Drug Burn as a single,
yep,
and Fixer. So you can actually go and hear that now. So,
and that's a Couchlet. My friend Forrest, who did the movie show with after Catawall, he's like, that's one of the only bands I've ever seen that I felt like I was genuinely in danger.
Yeah. She's great. She was telling me about it when I was there at your show. She was telling me about, she had to hitchhike somewhere, and she was hitchhiking. They picked her up, and she's, these nice guys. And she said, by the way, before we take off, I need you to know I'm multiply armed with knives, so I'll kill both of you if anything bad happens to me. And then they got their feelings so hurt, they were like, look, get out now. She goes, no, I'm sorry. I'm not going to get out. Just get me to my destination. Don't try anything.
So, Megan, what a gem. All right. Eugene, a pleasure.
Yes, sir.
It's always good to talk to you. Thanks
for having me, man.
Time. Yeah, anytime, man. Anytime.
Send me the link.
All right, word.
Later. Bye-bye.
All right, so tell me about, it's just you and me, kid. Just you and me, kid. So let's talk about anything musically with Fixer you wanna add on to that, other than Megan is awesome.
it's a on a song. It's a catchy song.
Yeah.
The first part is like pop, like Blur, something like Blur with the, and the final is dramatic.
Right. Oh, definitely. Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's very good. Would be well placed in a movie.
Yeah, very good.
Trash. Tell me about Trash.
Trash is an instrumental song. He's a trash metal song, really fast. It's a metal song with a saxophone.
Yes.
I came to do a solo with, like free jazz solo. It's really strange. The
some electronic kind of electronic stuff there too. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention that there's a, is that a cello that's on Leather Bar earlier?
Yeah. In the middle part.
That's nice.
In the middle part is a cello to joke with the dynamic stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Cello is such a cool instrument. One of my favorite bands.
Yeah.
Going right now. Full disclosure, we have a split LP with them. But Lung, the band Lung from Cincinnati, Ohio, just cello and vocals, one person, and drums, another person. And it's so heavy. It's wonderful. Beautiful music. And it's funny because I've seen them, you know, play with bands that have like 5-6 people, and it's like, yeah, lung's heavier than this and better than this.
It's really good.
It's a great instrument to see it deployed in a creative.
I like the cello in the Nirvana Unplugged. Yes.
Absolutely.
Dramatic.
And closing out a record that. How else would you close it out, right? It's a perfect way to close that out. It's such a cool thing, and it ends in so nicely with that.
Yes.
Pimp.
Pimp is a hypnotic song. First part is really the same loop for 2-3 minutes, and then we open the sound like ISIS. ISIS, the band of. Yeah, I think
the band, not the terrorist organization, right?
Yeah, no. The band of Aaron Turner.
Yes, I know them well. I know them. I saw them. I saw them a few times back in the day. Yeah, really, huge, deep sound and presentation.
Yeah, deep sound.
I will say, when I very first saw them, I was like, oh yeah, East Coast Neurosis. I get it. But like then I listened a little closer and I was like, okay, this is actually its own thing. That's cool. I mean, not there's anything wrong with being compared to Neurosis. Don't get me wrong. But like I definitely had to. It took me a while to kind of get what they were doing that was unique and cool.
Yeah.
So that's Pimp, and then we're closing out with a room. Anything else on that one?
A Room in Berlin is another jam with. Free jazz song. We stand in this territory with Buñuel. Sometimes we do doing rock. Other times we doing metal. Other times we doing jazz. We mix together these feelings.
Like MC5. You know, and they did that. Minutemen, you know, sometimes.
There's
a good rich tradition of that. No, it's cool. And like, can I tell you, I feel like Buñuel's a very heavy band.
Yeah.
And one of the things I don't care for in quote unquote heavy music is how there seems to be this very strict rule book of what what you can and can't do, which to me is completely against my entire sensibility. So I like that you guys bring in this other stuff.
Yeah.
And apply it in ways that doesn't confuse the aesthetic, but it actually amplifies it. And it means that, like, the actual heavy parts hit harder.
Yeah.
And I think that that's really cool. And I think that some bands try to do that. It's not great when you can't land it. But I think you guys landed very well, and I think it's very intelligent. So
I think our goal is this.
So Manzitude's the name of the record. This is what it looks like for the visual listeners. Sorry, podcast listeners.
Yeah,
secure.
For doing this record, we imagine three words. Intimidating, sexy, and bizarre.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's
The cover is sexy and dark.
Are you familiar? This is a uniquely American term, but the concept of the elevator pitch. Are you familiar with this? That's like the elevator pitch for the band. I love it.
Yeah. I hope.
Yeah, like you're in an elevator with David Lynch or Iggy Pop or somebody, right? And you're like, oh yeah, what's your band like? And you just drop that on them, and they know what time it is immediately.
Yeah.
Tell me about the album cover, real quick.
The artwork is made from a friend of us. Of Milan, is Solo Macello, is a group of artists.
Right.
It's not one artist, it's a collective.
Nice.
Yeah. Solo Macello.
Love it.
They are really, really nice.
it suits the music too. Like it's kind of I always talk about way back when I used to work at a record store, and it was, you know, years before you could just taste test, listen to something before you hear it, right? You had to go off of what the album cover looked like. So it's definitely the kind of album that you kind of know what you're going to get into, but looking at it, but you kind of don't at the same time. So it's going to be like, I'll spend $20 on that. Great. Or whatever.
It's really important for me, the cover.
I agree. I think that sometimes I see album covers, I'm like, oh, you just didn't put that much effort into it, huh?
Yeah.
So peace and love to them, but
I love the color of the album.
That's a nice. Is there a word for that specific shade of green? Because whatever it is, it's like my favorite shade of green. It's like forest green, maybe. I don't know, but it's there's something really beautiful about that shade of green specifically.
Every record we made, the first one was red.
That's right. So so that's an intentional thing of just having the different colors for the different records.
Yeah.
Oh,
the
cool.
Second one was yellow.
So what's gonna happen when you get to like the sixth or seventh record? You put them together. It's gonna look like lightsabers.
It's like unicorn.
Right. Exactly. It'll be like the Olympic rings or something along those lines. Franz, I think this record is great. I think you guys put out a really good one. I am excited for folks to hear it. I'm of course urging people to pick it up through Skingraft, through the Buñuel Bandcamp page. Oh, by the way, the band name is that from the director?
Yeah.
I love that dude.
It seems really it's like the director is surrealism.
Oh sure,
dream between dream and the live dream.
My favorite movies of his is the Exterminating Angel. I love that one so much. It's such an example of doing so much with like not even that much, and like just it has this the mood on that is so
it's beautiful. They construct songs. And seek to take the mind to realms adrift between dreams and reality, and violence, grace, destruction, darkness, light.
Underrated filmmaker and great touch point. I mean, to me, it's almost like calling your band Lynch or something. It's the same thing where it's like, oh, I instantly know where these guys are coming from.
Yes.
Anything else other than the record that you'd like to share? I know there are touring plans coming up. I don't know if that can be revealed at this time. Anything else you'd like to throw in that we didn't get to or that we didn't cover or gave short shrift to?
I think I wanted to. It's for me to make records. It's really good with Buñuel. He's really, and I'm enjoying this with Buñuel. But I wanted to take the album live on the stage.
I want to see it, man. I'm ready. I'm just let me know when you want me to book the show. I'll do it.
Yeah.
Probably need more than one to make it worth your while. But I'm sure it absolutely pops live, and I'm stoked for American audiences and Australian audiences to discover the band for the first time.
Yeah.
So go ahead. I was just gonna say the last thing I do on the show. This is and Eugene's been on plenty. He's answered this question plenty, so it's okay that he's not here. It's the only canned question, that I ever ask, and it's how you choose to answer it is however you want to. And here's the question: Why do you do what you do?
What is my work? No.
No, it's more, why do you play drums? Why do you play music? Why do you tour in a band? Why do you, why do you do any, but you can interpret it however you like. We want to hear the why.
The music for me is a really important thing. I start to doing drums at 5 years old. It's my life. I dream the music every night, during the day I listen to music. I study music. I teach music in the school. My work is teaching music. I'm a teacher of music in the high school. For me, it's a really important.
I love it. Franz, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having you on the show. The record's great. I hope to see you live, and we will meet in person.
I hope to.
And I wish you nothing but the best for this. This record's killer. And thank you for being on the show. I appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you, Conan.
Take care, brother.
Take.
There he goes. Franz. And, of course, the great Eugene Robinson. Buñuel, let's hear a song off of Manzitude to play us out. And everyone pick it up, people. Let's listen to Fixer.
Yeah.
There you go, Fixer by Buñuel, featuring the great Megan. Megan O. Couchlet. That's off of the fantastic record Manzitude. You can get that at Skin Graph Records and or the Buñuel Bandcamp, buñuel.bandcamp.com. By the way, Manzitude, Meekness or Gentleness. So there you go. We didn't get into why it was called that. But hey, I really want to thank Franz and Eugene for taking the time to talk about that record with me here in the good old home of the Protonic Versal. That's the name of this show, Code of Neutrons Protonic Reversal. This show airs normally Thursdays, 8 Eastern, 7 Central, 6 Mountain, 5 Pacific, streaming live on YouTube and Twitch, podcasted later everywhere, always free, no ads, no sponsors, no kidding. ProtonicReversal.com. If you like the show, or even just a single episode, you can support the show giving $1 a month at patreon.com/protonicreversal. All that gets you episodes earlier, and it helps keep the lights on, which is lovely to do. And if you like the show, even just a single episode, please feel free to like, subscribe on your platform of choice, share around, all that helps people discover the show. It's just the sound of my voice. Nice thing to do. What else? Let's see. There's a slight break. Who's coming up? We've got there's some good stuff coming up. There's the drummer for the Gits, the Mia Zapata book coming on. Chat Pile's coming back. Carl from Cal Marx. It's gonna be a good October, everybody. Of course, lots of Code of Neutron, the Secret Friend shows coming up as well. So I hope to see you there. Into electricity. Anyway, stay safe out there.
Can you hear me now?
And check you later.
Out on Route 128, dark and lonely. I got my radio on. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? Welcome to my top 10. I'd like to thank our sponsor. But we haven't got a sponsor. Not if you were the last man on earth. She was prepared to prove it. This one goes out to a special girl. There is no special girl! It's the end of radio! The last announcer plays the last record. The last what? Leaves the transmitter. Circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now?
it really broadcasting if there's no one there to receive? It's the end of radio. As we come to the close of our broadcast day. Radio.